This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Judge Glenda Hatchett may be best known for her TV show, Judge Hatchett, but her work goes far beyond that. She's a real-life judge, a renowned advocate for juvenile and social issues, and a best-selling author. Her book, Dare to Take Charge, How to Live and Lead with Purpose, tells us the stories of real people who took charge and turned their lives around when faced with adversity. Judge Hatchett joins us today to talk about her book, along with marketing and communications manager for the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, Carla Landon. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Judge Hatchett and Carla, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much, Mark. Delighted to
see you. So, Judge Hatchett, why did you write this book? What was the message that you wanted to convey?
Well, there were so many people who were coming up. There were so many people coming up to me and just saying, you know, Judge, I am at a place in my life where I'm at a crossroads, or I'm stuck, or I need some help. And so I really decided that I needed to do a very practical book that I hope would speak to lots of people where they are, not where we want them to be, and to encourage them and to motivate them with some life lessons and some stories that hopefully they could find some paths in. And I am always so encouraged when people stop me or write me or text me and say, you know, I can identify with that particular story and that particular chapter, and it helped me to get to a better place. And this is not necessarily people who are all necessarily suffering, but people who are doing extremely well, professionals who say, but there's just still not enough in my life. And so that's the whole dare. I dare you. I dare you to take charge. And there stand, the acronym stands for dreams are realities every day. But we've got to dream with our eyes wide open. We've got to be very intentional and very purposeful in what we do.
So you've got a lot of different stories in the book. Can you give us an example of one particular story?
Probably the very first one. And I really, Mark, almost didn't put it in the book because I was kind of ashamed to tell the story. It's my own story. And it's the title of the chapter is called How Dare You Not. And it's the day that I almost gave up on my dreams. I was so discouraged. I was just exhausted physically, emotionally, spiritually. I was just like, ah! And I was working full-time and a new, brand-new law student. And I did not realize that I had too much on my plate. And so the brief story is that I left, the condensed part of the story is that I just was working full-time as assistant dean in the undergraduate school, going to law school, and so it wasn't like a job. It was a job I had to be fully present for. For instance, you know, one night I was in the ER all night with one of my students who'd been raped, or I had to go and tell one of my students that her father had been killed, and so it was a very demanding job. So I thought, oh, I can't do this. I just can't do it, and I went to see my great aunt, who was really like a third grandmother to me. And I'm on and on and on about how I'm just miserable, how I hate school. And she finally stopped me. And she said, do you want to be a lawyer? And I just nodded because I couldn't even verbalize it. And she said these words that changed my life forever. She said, well, baby, if it were easy, everybody and their mama could do it. But it's not easy, and you've been uniquely blessed to do what you set out to do. And that moment, Mark, changed my life, because law school didn't get easier, work didn't get easier, but I absolutely got to a place where I said if there was ever anything in my life that I really, really, really wanted, that I would just dig in and figure out how in the world I would get it done.
And that was your Aunt Frances,
so,
wasn't it?
Yes.
So tell us about your dad's advice, because your dad's advice was pretty profound, too, when you were younger.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That's probably really my favorite story in the book. I was 6 years old. And I literally had been told by my first grade teacher, even though this was long after the Supreme Court school desegregation cases, that colored children didn't get new books and that I couldn't get a new book. And so I ran home and I was just so discouraged. And my father worked at night and my father was my hero. And I ran home and I said, "Oh, Daddy, Miss O'Neill says I can't get a new book because I'm colored." And he said, "She's right." And rather than to let me linger at the pity party, he told me to go into my room and write my own story.
Well, and he meant that literally, right? Go in and start writing.
Yes, go and start writing my story. And I'm like, "Oh, what? You know, I'm six. I'm crying. I'm upset. I didn't get a new book." And for your listeners who are wondering, what in the world is she talking about? I lived in Atlanta in the Deep South, and the tradition was that the books were thrown out by the white schools. Now, again, this is after the Supreme Court decision that somehow hadn't trickled down to my school system in Georgia. And they would throw out the books. The janitors from the colored schools would come over and take them back to our schools. And they would be missing pages and covers, and so the teachers did the best they could to do these books. And people, when I tell this story, they go, "What are you talking about?" But that is how the segregated South operated. That everything we had was trash. Our books, our desk, our no playground equipment, the crayons were nubs. And what his message, and I fully appreciate it now in that whole story, is that either you're going to be a victim or you're going to be victorious, is that there are times when things will not be fair in life. And you have to really then write your own story. Of course, you know, at six I didn't get it, but I get that message loud and clear now, that we're called on in very difficult times to not stay at the pity party, but to rather to reach deep in our souls and write a new story of hope and possibility. And so that is, my dad was and will be my hero throughout all of eternity. He's been dead for more than 20 years now, but such a valuable, valuable lesson that he and my mother could not fix a society where colored children didn't get new books, but he could fix me. And thank goodness that, you know, I had him for that wonderful guidance and for that inspiration in my life, for which I will be eternally grateful.
And you think his advice applies to everybody, it would sound like?
Oh, absolutely. And I tell people that. I said, you know, you get stuck because maybe you had a difficult childhood, and maybe your father was an alcoholic. Maybe you grew up poor. Maybe you are an immigrant to this country, and you know, English is your second language, and you feel somehow that you are really never going to get where you need to get. Well, no. Life is can be full of torn pages, and when you get to those pages, and that have maybe been ripped by sexism or ageism or racism or poverty, or whatever that is, that is when it is incumbent upon you to reach into your soul and write a new story. And that story is a story of hope and possibility and potential, because we are all here for a purpose. And I talk about that in the book. And it's important for you to understand that purpose, why you're here, what your reason is, and what passion, what is that drives you day in and day out. And either you're going to be stuck and the pity party and feel like you're always going to be a victim in your life, or you're going to be victorious and you're going to write that new story for your own life and not be defined by what other people say. And there's a whole other chapter in the book, as you know, about you can't let other people define you. You must define who you are in this world.
Judge Hatchett, you were litigating cases for Delta Airlines, and you also served as a manager of public relations for the airline. So you reached a very high position in the corporate world. So how did you end up taking a position as the chief presiding judge of Fulton County, Georgia Juvenile Court?
Mark, I tell you, I would have told you that we're going to get you some help. If you'd said, "Look, you know, you're going to leave your position at Delta, and you're going to come to juvenile court. I would say, look, Mark, you know, we need to have a talk. I'm going to get you some help. We're going to, you know, whatever. Because I would have thought you were out of your mind. I mean, honestly, I would have like, what are you talking about? And that was my reaction. The judge who had that position for many years, a woman who I deeply admire, died. And some people in the community said, Glenda, you should do this. My mentor, a dear friend and advisor, said, Glenda, I want to talk to you about this. So I asked my dad to come to the meeting. And my whole thing was, I am honored, but I wasn't leaving my job, Mark. I was the highest woman of color, any color, Hispanic, African-American, Asian, any color, at Delta Airlines worldwide. You know, and I expected to leave there as a executive vice president, retire, and be a serve on the board. That was my game plan. And so the condensed version of the story is that, you know, my dad said, Glenda, after the meeting was over, he said, before you decide, you should pray about it. And I was like, pray about what? You know, I mean, I didn't say that out loud. That was my inner voice, right?
Okay.
And so, and I did start praying about it. And what I know is that sometimes when you turn it over to God, you can't take it back. And it was, I struggled with it because I was comfortable. You know, I was making money, could fly anywhere in the world I wanted. I had two young kids. The thought of being in a station wagon to go see my in-laws was too much. I fought. So long story short, I did keep struggling with it. And the question kept coming back to, was I making a difference? Yes, I was winning cases. Yes, I was representing, a global airline. Yes, 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 I was the highest ranking woman of color. Yes, all of that. But was I making a difference in anybody else's life? And I thought, juvenile court, maybe I can get my hands on a 15-year-old that we may not see in the prison system at 25, 35, 45. Maybe I can encourage young women, you know, that there's an alternative to getting pregnant at 15. And I just was so determined that this was what I was supposed to do. And it ended up being exactly what I was supposed to do. And that's where, as I talk about in the book, it was in that job very early on that my passion and my purpose intersected, for which I will be forever grateful that I found my purpose and passion in that work. It was life-changing for me. It really was.
In the book, you talk about creating a joy journal. And I wonder if you can explain what that is and how that helps people.
I'm so glad you mentioned this, Mark, because I have really gotten slack on mine, and I've got to go back and pick it up. One of the things is that we can get so busy in our lives that we fail to notice the things that are joyful in our lives. And it doesn't have to be like this major ta-ta, but just something that gives you joy. And you just keep a joy journal. And if you do it for 30 days, it can really become a wonderful habit. And then you go back and read, you know, like at least once a week, you go back and read. Because what it does is it reminds you of the things that are really, really, really important. Like Saturday, I did what I call unplugged. You know, I turned off my phones, I turned off my computer, all of that. And I spent the entire day with my grandsons. One is 4 months old, one is 23 months old. And, you know, it's just the simple things in life that can really, really, really make a difference. We just have to be very conscious of looking for things that are joyful. Because if you become more conscious of joy, then you're more likely to see more joy in your life. And that's important. That's so important that we take the time to appreciate and be grateful for the joyful things. And so joy journals are a wonderful way to do that. They need to be tiny so you can stick them in your, a guy needs to be able to stick it in his coat pocket, woman, you know, throw it in her purse or whatever, but it needs to be something that you keep, or on your smartphone. You can put it in your notes section if that's easier for you. But keep a joy journal, and it will make, I promise you, it will make an enormous difference in your life.
And Judge Hagedo, you've done so many things throughout your life, throughout your career. One of the things is you started a global social networking site called ParentPowerNow.com. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's dormant right now because we've got to retool it. But the whole idea is that if we can get on social media, you know, and network and do all these kind of things, why not have that kind of platform for parents so that they can network, they can share, they can develop subgroups. There was a woman in the group who had a child who was autistic, and then she found other parents around the country who had children who were autistic. Or a woman was moving from Seattle to Atlanta. She found some resources because her child was really gifted in dance. And so that's the whole idea, is to really support parents. And we've got to get that back up. But that is dormant now, but something that I feel very passionate about.
Yeah, but it shows the importance, though, the role that parents can play in helping to shape their children, help them to dare to change and take charge.
Yes, take charge. That's right. And those lessons are never too early instilled in our children. And we have that responsibility to do that for our children. Yes.
Well, Judge Hatchett, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, I've loved being with you this afternoon, and I'm looking forward to being in Kentucky Thursday, which I think Carla's going to talk about.
We're going to hear more about that from Carla. Thank you so much, Judge Glenda Hatchett.
Oh, thank you. I certainly enjoyed this. You have a wonderful day. Thank you so much.
Carla, tell us about the event that is coming up. I believe it's this week, actually.
It is. It's on Thursday, and you can tell why we have Judge Hatchett coming to speak. It's our fifth annual Leadership Breakfast. It takes place on Thursday at Receptions Banquet and Conference Center in Erlanger, Kentucky, from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m., and it's sponsored by the Leadership Northern Kentucky alumni. Leadership Northern Kentucky is a fantastic program at the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce. And what's interesting is Judge Hatchett talked about intentional leadership and ways to really make a difference. And this is one of the key things that Leadership Northern Kentucky does in our community.
Will there be a Q&A session? Will people be able to ask Judge Hatchett questions about her life? And because there were things we couldn't even go into. We just didn't have the time.
I know. She's fantastic. There is going to be an opportunity to ask questions. Walk-ins are definitely welcome. And if you mention Cincinnati Edition as you walk in, you'll get to enter the program for $40, get a copy of her book, and have a chance for her to sign that book on Thursday as well.
So tell me a little bit more about Leadership Kentucky. What is that organization?
Absolutely.
About?
Leadership Northern Kentucky uses the community as a classroom to develop leaders who will effectively serve our region. The program runs from September until May, and it's made up of the top 50 or so leaders in our community. It gives them a chance to learn a little bit about economic development in our region, kind of the government, encourages inclusive leadership, and really provides individuals in the community a way to work together, to collaborate, and really benefit not just Northern Kentucky, but our region as a whole.
How many people typically attend one of these meetings?
One of the breakfast, mm-hmm. We're going to have over 300 people at this breakfast this year. So it's a great turnout and a great opportunity to network.
But you still have room for more, right?
We have walk-in room. Yeah, it'll okay. be a little tight, but she's a fantastic speaker, and we're really looking forward to it.
Well, Carla, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks so much, Mark.
And Judge Hatchett will be speaking at a leadership breakfast hosted by the Leadership Northern Kentucky alumni. Again, that's Thursday morning from 7:30 until 9:30, and you can find a link to more information at WVXU.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. And William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. local Japanese American Citizens League and the Council on American Islamic Relations will present a program this Saturday to explore the dangers of fear-mongering in the United States. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll discuss the treatment of Japanese Americans during World War II and the current climate of fear towards Muslim and Sikh Americans. We'll also hear how a film series can connect and support local neighborhoods. That's Cincinnati Edition tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.